You are about to hear Mrs. C. Irving Dowd, who has lived most of her life in Mill Valley, recall her early memories. The tape was recorded at her home in October 1968. She frequently used photographs from her extensive albums to refresh her recollections. Other voices on the tape are those of the interviewers, Ruth and Joe Wilson of Mill Valley, and a kitten named Muffy, who was in a very talkative mood. There are other extraneous and sometimes distracting sounds on the tape. Ignore them if you can.
What was your name?
Margaret Walser.
How do you spell it?
W-O-S-S-E-R.
Walser. It means water, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, W-A-S-S-E-R would mean water in German. Mm-hmm. But as far as they know, my grandfather was born in Dublin, and then my grandmother, my father's mother, was born in Kilkenny, and they came to California. My grandfather, Walser, was during the Mexican War. He was a very young boy. I don't know, this was before the Civil War, and he worked in a munitions factory when he first came to this country during the Mexican War. And my mother's father, who was the same age as my father's father, was very young, and he was driving teams carrying munitions to Mexico. I guess that was the time of when, I don't remember my history so well right now, but when they acquired Texas, don't you suppose it was? I think it must have been. Well, anyhow, then they, my father's father went to sea, and then he came to San Francisco, and he met my grandmother, and they were married in Old St. Mary's Church, which is on California Street, you know. And then they moved to Sausalito. I don't know, the house that they built on Pine Street in Sausalito is about 100 years old.
And it's still standing.
And it's my aunt, my dad's younger sister, still lives in that house. She was a librarian in Sausalito for years.
What was her name?
Mabel Walser. And she's never married. And you see, there were 14 children. And Aunt Mabel was the youngest. My dad was next to the youngest. And they have all lived long lives.
Were you born in Sausalito?
No, I was born at Duncan's Mills, which is up at the near Jenner, near the mouth of the Russian River.
Oh, yeah.
And my mother's sister married a man named Frank Orr. And his father was one of the first presidents of whatever they called it, the Caledonian Club in San Francisco. And there were a lot of Scottish people up in that part of the Russian River. There was Duncan, who had the mill at Duncan's Mills, and there were the Sheridans, who were cousins of my uncles, and then the Orrs, and a lot of Scotch people. And so that was where I was born, at my aunt's place.
Do you mind telling us what your birthday was?
The 10th of January, 1906, 3 months before the earthquake. And then, here are some pictures. These are pictures of early Sausalito. Now, this is my father when he was about 16. And this was in the... and this man is Frank Thomas. And he worked... He had... well, he was chief master mechanic, you'd call him, for the Mount Tamalpais Railroad for years. And his brother, Bill Thomas, developed about the first engine that had the cab in front, like these big, they call them mallies that go over the mountains now. Well, Bill Thomas, the brother of this man, was the one who invented that type of engine.
Isn't this marvelous?
And you know, up in, when we lived up in Blythefield Canyon, when I was about three, my mother and dad bought a house on Blythefield. And the old mountain railroad track went right behind our house. And then to go downtown, almost everyone that lived up the canyon, when you would be in a hurry, you'd walk down the railroad track. That was the shortest way to town, to down to the village, you see. And as you went down, there was the old shops where they would work leaders, or this is my husband. And he was born in Mill Valley in the, this is sort of remarkable, right where we have our business today, 157 Throckmorton. And Irv was born there. Then in those days you were born at home, and the doctor was Dr. Spottiswood, who was an old, wonderful old man in Mill Valley. And he, Irv was born
that was
in 1896, mm-hmm. in November of 1896.
Even
then he was, and he was a very dear person, and he had a great sense of humor, and he was very much liked by everyone. I think he was a fine person. And his mother, his father, had come, well, wait, his grandfather had come to California, and he had settled up on the other side of this Cordillera Hill. You know where Marion Joe's place is now?
Oh, yes.
So there's a little place in there where there are a lot of apartments.
Yes.
Just this side of Marion Joe's. Well, that was Dowd's property, and they had a little, well, I don't know what they called a ranch or a farm there, and that is where Irv's father was born. And then when his father was a young man, he started this livery stable in Mill Valley, and they also did whiskey chairs, did a lot of they used, what they call, I think they were Fresno graders or something, like this. They have these big scrapers and things, and I think they had about 50 horses in the barn that they rented out, some for work teams and some for pleasure horses, and they also would
say about 50 horses.
Yes, and they had teams that would be would take out a surrey, you know, for people who wanted to go on a picnic or something. Is this too close?
Oh no, no, it's comfortable.
And I don't have.
What was the location of that business?
Right where it is today, where the moving sales business is today. In fact, the old now this isn't doesn't show any of the doubts, but this is. Some of the buggies or something where they worked in the shop there.
Weren't they beautiful?
But they had, this is another picture of her. But they had also a lot of people who owned their own horses would board them there, you see.
Yeah.
Have you any idea about what year they started this?
Well, I don't know. The business, we say, began in 1896. Now that was the year that Irv was born, and I don't know that his father's might have had some business in Mill Valley before that time, but that's when they say the business was founded. And hey,
that's me.
So they had donkeys too. We always have a story that I've already told about Irv, that they would rent donkeys for youngsters to ride, and some of them were not too well behaved, and youngsters would ride up about as far as the old mill, and then the donkey would have had enough of it, and he would dump the youngster and come back to the barn. And then they would also, I think Dowd's had a stage, I know they did at one time, which went from Stinson Beach up to West Point on Mount Tamalpais.
Yeah.
And then Irv said often when he was a young man, people would come and want to go to Muir Woods, so they would have his father supply a team, and Irvin would drive the team over for people to have a picnic in Muir Woods and go sightseeing. And then another thing that they later on had, I suppose even in those days, you had to branch out to make money, you know. You never seem to perhaps become too prosperous in a small town. And so they started, they had an undertaking business with some man named Eden, that, and they would have the horses, and they bought the fine, hearse, a horse-drawn hearse. It was all glass and black ebony, looking finish to it, very fine. And then they would have the carriages for the mourners and all that. And Irv said one time, going up to the cemetery, which is down here near the Tennessee Valley Road, Fernwood Cemetery, and the person who had died was a friend of a lot of people in Sausalito. And there were these great big stout men. There was a man named Creed and a man named Hannon. They were these very heavy men. Well, going up this hill from down near Tennessee, the horses balked, and they wouldn't drag the wagon up this hill. So Irv was driving his team. He was quite young then. So he told these men they would have to get out and walk. And they were the pallbearers, I think. So they were very indignant, but the horse wouldn't go so that the funeral could continue on up the hill. They had to get out and walk, and they were panting and puffing. And finally they got to the top of the hill, and then they could get in the carriage again. So that was things.
Well, in those days, did the road go pretty much where it does
this
now?
Yes.
In the Muir Woods.
Yes. Yeah, this road, as long as I can remember, because the road through Tamalpais Valley was the same as it is now, and this road has been here for many, many years. There was a little dairy right up on the hill above us here, you see. People named Latasia had the dairy up there. And the road around the mountain, of course, the road that continues around the old pipeline trail. Yes, panoramic. That, I can't remember the year that that was built, but everybody thought that was a great mistake to put that road in, that it would be, the old houses would be built all over the mountain and it would be subdivided, but that didn't happen. People around here are quite protective as far as the country is concerned, they aren't we? All of us. And you don't like to lose all that mountain, and I don't think they ever will. That's one thing, all the bulldozing they've done on these ridges and the places they built the houses, they can't change the mountain. We've heard how the fire did come down some at that last...
What year was that? 1929,
wasn't it?
Yes.
Didn't it just almost take Middle Ridge out?
It did. It came, in fact, right down almost to what is Bayview Avenue, right in back of town. And the day of that fire, it was, the old Fox Theater that has been torn down in the city? Well, about that same time, in 1929, that theater opened. And my mother had gone to see something or other at this new theater. And when she got out of the show, there were some friends, there were headlines, people, news boards saying, Mill Valley in flames, this and that and the other thing. And Mother said, that's ridiculous. They exaggerate these things. So she went down to the ferry and she caught the boat. And coming across, the closer she would get here, the more she could see the smoke. And there were cinders blowing out onto the bay when they were pulling into Sausalito. The wind was so strong. And we lived at, 121 West Blythedale is what it is now. And they had stopped people going up the road. And Mr. Jenkins, who lives up the canyon, Jimmy Jenkins, saw my mother, and he said, well, she could go through because he knew where she lived. She went home. Then everything had been taken out of the house. And she didn't know who had done it. The last thing to find was my father's good hat, which was tucked away in a closet.
You mean it was gone?
But my husband had gone up there and taken everything out of the house, you see. And then she got the hose, and the fire was burning right down across from us along that little trail that runs above Cormadera Avenue, or used to be. It's pretty well gone now, I think. But the fire was way down there, and of course so many people lost just about everything. Mm-hmm. But our house did not burn, and it was, I remember they had a meeting at the town hall, and a lot of indignant people were there, and they were complaining and blaming the fire on the mountain train. And people said that the train had started the fire. And the people from the railroad said, no, our train went up there at a certain time, whatever it was, 2:20 or something or other, and there was no fire. And they said, no, but half an hour later, the fire was blazing. But they used to set, they would start the fire in the engine with wood, and then the train would start up the mountain, and the wood from that firebox would drop, the coals would drop on the right-of-way, and the right-of-way would be grassy. It would catch fire, and then the wind, if there was any wind, it would go on and really spread in a hurry. Yes. One thing I always loved to think about was that when I was young, you could go out and pick wildflowers, you know. And we would go up on Blytheville Ridge, and you'd get these lovely wild irises in the spring, and there were places you'd have your favorite, well, they're like wild cyclamen, you know, the little Johnny jump-ups or shooting stars, and then there would be fiddle areas along the trail that went above Cormadera Avenue. And the places you'd find the wild strawberries in the spring, and then gradually the houses would be built right where the best baby blue eyes were. When we were young, we went to Summit School, and ever so many people, of course, that grew up in Mill Valley went to that school. And, you know, I used to think that when people would come in, they would cut down all the trees and would ruin a place. Well, you find that people plant the trees. You look at old pictures of Belvedere. It was just a bare, grassy knoll, you know, about 60 or 70 or more years ago than that. But in Mill Valley, too, the trees have come with the people. And here's Summit School. And in those days, you know, we used to, they'd have a boy that would drum you into school, you know, they would blow a whistle and everyone would line up, and then they'd have a drummer boy and you'd march into this,
to the drummer?
Yeah.
Was this the only school, the only elementary school in Mill Valley?
In Mill Valley, yes.
And where did you go to high school then?
Carol Pius.
It was there.
Carol Pius began in, see, I graduated from Carol Pius in 1922. And the high school, I think about the first graduating class must have been about 1911. I know my cousin, who was about 10 years older than I am, or maybe a little more than that, daughter's older than that. And she graduated with the first class that had gone a full 4 years. Mm-hmm. They started in a tent, you know, and it was wonderful to think how that school was developed.
How big was Mill Valley? Turn of the century is.
Well, you see, originally Mill Valley was a like a little place. It was sold. There was a lot of property sold here. For summer people to come and have vacation homes, and there were a number of old hotels here, quite a few, and people would come from San Francisco and spend their summers, and people, their husbands would go back and forth to work in town. And then when the earthquake came, so many people that were burned out of their homes in the city came over and lived in their summer homes or bought someone else's place, and then that's when it really began to grow. This is up on Mount Tamalpais. Now, doesn't that look exciting, all that snow? That was in 1912. That was in January, because I particularly remember it because my father wanted to take my mother riding up the mountain to see the snow, and it was my birthday, and she was having a party for me, so she couldn't go. So we took two of his sisters, and they went on horseback up. And, you know, we get so excited when we have a little snow around here.
What happened to the Mill Valley Depot?
Did they tear it down?
Well, it torn down, yes. As far as I know, that first one, that good-looking little old building that was there, I don't know what happened to that, but the last one that they had was torn down.
And what about Summit School?
Summit School was torn down.
It was.
Mm-hmm. when the old Dowd barn, the first barn that they had, burned in 1910, I think it was. And they had all of these horses, and they would get in a whole carload or more of hay, and they'd also get in a lot of coal, because they used to have a Japanese or a Chinese cook for the men that worked for them, and they would give them their, they had a place to sleep, and they would get their meals there. And they think that the cook dropped a cigarette or whatever in the, that thing caught fire, and this, the whole barn got on fire and burned, and they said the thing smoldered for about a week because they had just gotten in all of this coal and hay, and it just made a tremendous fire. So they got all the horses out though, and a lot of, most all of their equipment, but they lost all of their furniture except my husband's father's desk, a nice old walnut desk. Mm-hmm. That was the only thing that they rescued from the fire. And then they rebuilt though, and the building that is still there now was built in, I think it was the late part of 1910 or 1911.
So. The stables that burned down, were they larger or?
Well, they were pretty much the same. They, in fact, the building they have now, it looks so much like it, except they have no living quarters above it. When they rebuilt it, they didn't bother with that anymore. So they had horses there until about, I'd say 20 years ago now. As long as they continued to keep horses there, they were allowed to, but once they took them away, of course they could never bring them back. But it used to be lots of fun, and the hikers that used to come to Mill Valley, I'm sure a lot of people will tell you about that, but they would come over on the trains, you know. This was after World War I, really, that so many people didn't have cars, and they would walk a lot more, you know. And you'd see them starting out in the morning, and they'd have, well, we used to go too, and you'd take your lunch in a box of some sort, loads of sandwiches and all of this, and go to the beaches, either to Stinson or Big Lagoon or Muir Woods, you know, or hike up the mountain. And then you'd see people coming back to catch the train at night, and they'd be so tired, and there'd be some ahead that shouting to tell the people, hurry up, the train's leaving. You could hear the gong, the clang, 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 and then the poor tired girls would be coming along. And I remember some of them, the outfits that people would hike in were really ridiculous. Nowadays, so many things you wear are so much more sensible. Girls would go hiking with high heels, and then they would have, in World War I, the men wore these spiral leggings, you know, that wound around their legs. Well, you'd see the girls starting out with these high heels and then these spiral leggings, and their boyfriends probably these wing pants, you know, that they used to wear at that time. And then when they'd be coming home, sometimes these old leggings would have come off and they'd be dragging. They'd be sad looking. I know lots of very good hikers too, but some of them would come over from the city and they wouldn't know how to dress or, you know, how to be comfortable if you were going on a long hike. I remember my father saying, this was, of course, years and years before when I was married, and I know that Dad used to say that Dowds fed their men well, and they also took good care of their animals, that if you rented a horse from Dad's, he wouldn't wear out before you got back wherever you were going. And they kept their health. The people that worked for them stayed for years. You know, they were well treated and liked to work for Earth's dad and his mother.
How many men do you think they had?
Oh, they used to have maybe 11 or 12
Is
men.
That
yeah, quite a few. But in those days, you see, that was your transportation. That was the... Oh, and some of the funny things. I wish Irv could tell you a lot of the stories. I never got tired of hearing him tell these things. And
his stories were always true stories. When he was young, they had a Nickelodeon, a show, you see, that you only paid a nickel to go to a 5-cent show. And they would have maybe once in a while, like a vaudeville entertainer come. Well, there was this man named Holton, and they advertised that Holton the Cannonball King was coming to be in the show this particular weekend, and all the little boys and everybody, they were so excited. They showed pictures of this man with all the muscles and standing this way and that and holding a great cannonball, and the cannon had fired this at him, and he just grasped it. Well, that was going to be a big thing. So finally, the night came for this big performance, and there was a lot of fanfare before the man came out in this little stage, in this little tiny theater. And finally, the youngsters had hoped it would be something so big, and here this little tiny cannon shot out a ball about as big as, it wasn't as big as larger than the baseball, but not very big, and he goes through all this motion and then catches this little ball and shot out of the cannon with a little clip. And then there was another time he said that there was someone going to cut someone in half or something or other, I can't remember. And they, the youngsters went down, the show was right near the creek, and underneath it there was quite a bit of space, and they had this, I think anyone that's heard old stories of vaudeville, how they would go beneath the thing and have, it would really be a fake, that they would have some sort of a lift that would come through the floor to bring somebody up or down, you know. And these youngsters checked in and saw all the details of how that performance went on, too. And then when the trains used to come into Mill Valley, the old electric trains, on Halloween the youngsters would take a dummy and put it down on the railroad track, and then the floor engineer would come and he would see this figure on the track and put the brakes on. Everybody would practically fall off of their seats when he'd stop so quickly, and that would be the excitement for Halloween. I remember too that when I was going to high school, after Halloween, here was one of Dowd's dump trucks up on top of the gymnasium, and they had evidently, those things weighed an awful lot, and they'd taken us apart and worked and put this wagon up on the roof of this building, you know. But that used to be the thing, and all the gates that would be taken, you know, on Halloween. Of course, in those days, you could go hunting, and this had not become a reserve, and I know that on Thanksgiving Day, when you would have a family gathering, well, all the young men in the family would go down to Tennessee and go quail hunting in the morning, get up a big appetite, you know, hiking over the hills, and then get home in time for Thanksgiving dinner. And in those days, you'd go out in the country, and did you ever do that and buy your turkey?
Oh,
you know,
kept it in the backyard.
Yes.
Oh, yes, we never bought a turkey in a store.
Well, this is, they're talking about that, too. I said Dowd's had a cook. Well, they had a Japanese cook named George. And it was around Thanksgiving time, and George said there was a raffle down at the pool hall, which was down between Dowd's and where the railroad depot is. And he said to Mrs. Dowd, "You give me 20 cents. I'll go see if I can get us a turkey." So he bought two paddles, evidently, and they spun a wheel, and lo and behold, George won a turkey. So he came back, and they had, it wasn't just like a chick sale sort of a privy thing, but they had whatever you call a plumbing thing, the toilet was out on the end of this walk, though, and it was a proper sanitary plumbing, whatever, you know, the new modern kind for that day. But that was where they put the turkey, up in that little outhouse. Somebody went out and opened the door, and out came the turkey. And he flew up the top of a redwood tree out in the back of the barn. Well, that was a great tragedy. So George told Mrs. Dowd, "If you'll cook for the men, I'll go get the turkey." So he, you know the way the Japanese will wear a sling and climb? You know, like they tie
a
sling thing around the tree.
Yeah.
So up went George up this tree, got almost to the turkey flew to the next tree. Well, Irv said this went on, and it, about 4 or 5 hours later, George came back. He had the turkey. He brought him out. He climbed every tree from down up to the old mill, I guess. And he'd just get up, the turkey go to the next tree. But he brought him back. And then I remember when the armistice was signed for World War One.
The real one or the false one?
The real one. Oh, we had the fault, but this was the real one. And as I said, we lived up Blythedale, and the old railroad shops were down below as well. My best friends lived, Marion and Jean Ward lived right near us there, and we went down and we blew the whistle on the old engine until there was no more steam left in the engine. And this was, the word must have come pretty much in the middle of the night. And then we went on down, and the old Mr. Stoney, Chief Stoney, was the fire chief, and he took the whole crowd on the fire engine, and I was lucky enough to be on that with these youngsters. And they went around and stopped at the various homes where people had someone in the war, and then they would sing the Star Spangled Banner and Over There and the Marseillaise and all of these songs serenading these people. And then later on in the morning, early 6 or 7 or so, then they had a coffee and refreshments downtown, and different people, the baker brought over donuts, and somebody else brought coffee, and they had this down in the little Lytton Square, it is now, but in the little town square, and everybody in town, I guess, was down there rejoicing because the war was over, you know.
What was in the square on those? In those days.
Well, as long as I can remember, I don't remember when the flagpole was erected, but this was something that I can just remember, a great clump of laurel trees, which was right, you know where the Bank of America is, and the Mill Valley Furniture Store, or in that Y there was a great old clump of laurel trees, and they had a great chain around this thing. And my dad said years ago that had been where this blacksmith named McLeod had come from Sausalito and had done smithy work there. And then later on there were other blacksmiths too, but the people from around would bring in their wagons and their horses for work to be done, shoes on the horses and fix the wheels on the wagons and things like that. And but as far as I can remember, of course, the roads weren't paved, and I remember they had many boardwalks instead of sidewalks. I never learned to roller skate because there was nothing and no good place to skate in those days.
And your heels always went down between the cracks.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I remember that.
And then
were the business houses situated much like
they are now,
the square?
Yes, just as they are now.
And the depot then was where the bus station now stands.
Yes, that was it. And then the old mountain train used to come through, do you know where Paul Rice has his optometrist shop? Well, the train went right through there, right between the drugstore, which is there, and where the pet shop is. Well, right through there, it came right down to connect with the train, which came from the city, came from Sausalito. And then the passengers would get off and take the old mountain train there.
When did you get married?
Well, I, Irv and I were married in 1948, but I was married before, and I've known Irv since I was about 6, and when I was a little girl, he was about 16, he was a little older than I. And we used to camp up at the boot jack. My father used to camp up here in the mountain and go hunting. And Irvin and his cousin, Oscar Kaffelman, used to come up there and hunt. And they would, my mother would always have more exciting things to eat in her camp than they had in theirs. They'd come down to our camp to get some food. Then we'd play, they would play cards. So I went to school with her sisters, and we all hunted over at Salinas together, and then I was married to a man named Jack McGinnis, and I had two girls, and then we were divorced when my oldest girl was about 5, and then I guess when Irvin and I were married, my oldest daughter, my sister's 20, and my youngest daughter's 19. So we were very happy, and we had a lot in common, and my father and her had been good friends for so many years, too. So we were very happy, and it was very wonderful time in my life. And he, I'm sure anything you hear about Irv will be nice. Irv's home was up on Bayview Avenue, which is two streets, you know, behind the Throckmorton level and then Bayview.
Oh, yes.
And there are two houses. One is on level and one is on Bayview that Irv's father built. And his sister, one sister, lived in that old family home. And when Irv and I were first married, we lived there. And we bought a place over at Stimson Beach, and we thought we would live there. And then we decided, we were thinking about when we would retire and where would we want to live. And Irv decided he did not want to live anywhere but in Mill Valley. So then we bought this house, which had first been built by a man named Clyde Scott. He was an artist. And you see that this was the porch. This part was added on later. And then a man named McCallum, a realtor, he's still in business here in town, Jack McCallum, he and his wife bought this property and added this room and a great big bedroom we had downstairs. And they loved the garden. They had a barbecue house and lovely begonias and fuchsias and things. So we decided that we would eventually want to have our home in Mill Valley, it seemed better that we look for a place because we loved the garden, and the place in Stinson was going to need lots done to it, and rather than spend a lot of money on that, we decided to look for a place here. So we found this place. We had lots of pleasure here. Irv always liked horses, and I thought, I had grandchildren, and I had had a pony when I was little, and I thought it would be nice if they could have a horse. So I bought a pony. Irv told me that it was much better to buy youngsters a nice, gentle old horse rather than a pony to learn on, to learn to ride. But I saw this cute Shetland, and I bought it. And my oldest granddaughter rode quite well, and the little one got dumped several times, and she didn't care much for riding. So as the older girl grew a little bit large for the pony, that we did get her horse. And then, of course, the youngster's ability changes, and she was ready for a better horse. So we got, I bought a nice mare. And when we first had her, Bert said that, she looks to me like she might be going to have a colt. And we showed us the vet, and he said, oh, no. He said, that's just a hay bale. He said that you ride her and that she'll lose that. Well, we bought the horse in April, and then we had a colt. And that was a great day. And we kept the horses right out here. We have about an acre here. And we had the barbecue house of McCallum's. And the part that had been his hothouse, we made into a barn. It was like a great big box stall. So that was a big day, and we had this darling colt. And then later on, we got two other horses, and we sold the mare and the colt. And Irv had lots of pleasure from those horses, because having grown up with them, he would love to spend time just washing them and grooming them. And I got very spoiled. We used to ride a lot, but we would, I hardly ever had to saddle them. He'd do all of that, you know. And then my granddaughter, that liked to ride so much, won first place in the junior division of this Southern Marine Horsemen's Association. Mm-hmm. They had a ride around the mountain, sort of an endurance thing, and they would have a veterinary about every 7 miles to check the horses, and they would have judges. And she won first place 2 years in a row on this great big quarter horse that we had. Mm-hmm. And the second year, she won with a rating of 100%, and so did the horse. So we were very proud of that. And then Irv and I rode in the mountain play on these horses 1 year. They had Flamenca, and we went as gypsies. He was the gypsy king, and I was the gypsy queen.
Tell us more about the summer people in the early days of Mill Valley.
There were so many different kinds of summer people, just like there were people that you were fond of, there were people that were friendly, and I think there was a friendly atmosphere here. It was not, there was no resentment, I don't think. People liked these people. They were pleasant, and you knew most everyone. You'd go downtown, and everyone would speak to friends. You know, you had that nice small town feeling.
Well, after all, many of them eventually moved over here, didn't they?
That's right. Well, it's always been a quite a nice place to live at that. I was thinking tonight, looking at the mountain, and when you go away on a trip and you come back, and you say if you're coming from the Sacramento Valley and you come up over the hills and you get that first glimpse of the mountain, it's such a welcome sort of a thing. And coming up Miller Avenue and looking at the little town and with the mountain behind it, I wonder sometimes if we really appreciate what we have. It's so, I don't know. Although this, during World War II, there were so many boys stationed over at Tiburon at that, what had been the coaling station. It became the net depot, and then it was for boys who were being trained in the Navy. And we would be driving, of course, you would give, we didn't feel about them like you do about hitchhikers now. You'd give these servicemen a lift. So I'm always inclined to talk a lot anyhow, and I would say, one time I said, how do you like our mountain? And we were coming from Tiburon toward Mill Valley, and this boy said, oh, where is it? And I said, why, Mount Tamalpais, don't you know Mount Tamalpais? Well, he was from Colorado. It didn't impress him one bit. And I thought he should be really pleased, you know Mount Tamalpais. He didn't even know where it was. You know, and over on that lagoon in Tiburon, so many little houses that look out on the lagoon, and some of those along that avenue that goes along the bay, they just seem to turn their back on the mountain. They don't, mm-hmm. And that, to me, is one of the loveliest views, looking from there toward the mountain,
yeah,
across
yeah.
the water. From there. We used to ride horseback a lot around the mountain, you see, and on the old railroad track.
Yeah.
And we'd go out from here on the old pipeline trail up to the mountain home, and then take the mountain road and ride around and come around by that old the Lando property, and then on around. And then sometimes we'd come down the summit, and then other times we would come all the way around and down through the Black Canyon.
That must be an interesting period in making the transition from horses across to trucks. I suppose your husband was up to his neck in both of them.
Yes. Well, you see, when he graduated from school, he went to Tamalpais, and his first job, he worked for, I think it was Tyler Pepper or something or other, spices in the city. His cousin worked for past brothers of some one of those people that he was a salesman for this grocery concern, and he got a good job. And then from there, I went to work for the Federal Reserve Bank. And he worked there for all year or so, I guess. And then World War I came, and he went to war. And when he came back, he went back to the bank, because in those days, they did as they did in World War II. They would, you know, keep your job for you. And then his father had died when he was 16. And when he came back from war, he must have been about 20. And his mother turned the business over to her then, and they had quite a little discussion as to whether he wanted to stay on at the bank or take over his old family business. And he came back to the business, and then he worked very, very hard. He had a lot of responsibility, and he was young, and I know that he did a lot of heavy physical work for years. He had a building material business, and I don't know how many carloads of gravel he must have unloaded by hand, you know, because they didn't even have a conveyor in those days to help unload. And then later on they got that sort of thing, but they hauled gravel with teams of horses in these old dump wagons, mm-hmm. you see. And he would do, I guess, about the hardest work that had to be done around the place. And then when they got their first truck, it was a flatbed with stakes on the side, you see. And then, I don't remember just what year he got the first covered van.
And then you moved furniture in a flatbed truck?
In a flatbed truck with just stake sides, you know, just like a little old, well, what
did
like
call a wagon.
It? Yes, like mm-hmm. a wagon. And they had a man that worked for them that, when they first got their trucks, that just did mechanical work for them, that repaired them. I guess the trucks broke down at all, but they had their own mechanic. And in those days, I don't suppose they had too many garages. I remember that you go into the places to get your car fixed. They weren't like the garages today. And remember, do you remember when they used to repair tires? The tires were hard tires, and you would put some sort of little rubber stuff to fill in the holes in those tires. They weren't not these pneumatic tires. Those first
those were truck tires.
More like
solid
tires.
They were hard rubber. And I was surprised I came in San Francisco in 1946, and the first job I had was in the motor vehicle registration, and they were still registering trucks with solid rubber tires on.
Wow.
Some of these old drayage outfits in San Francisco. I've been driving those things for, 20, 25 years.
Yeah.
Keeping those trucks going.
Well, I remember when Mill Valley had its first fire truck. They got rid of the nice old team that they'd had, and it was a big thing. I think it was a DeMartini or something or other, a great big old red thing. And Mr. Thoney, who had driven the teams and horses, learned to drive this. And that was Mill Valley really advancing when they got that. Here's the fire department. Here's the old team of horses. And this is the old firehouse.
Was it in the same location?
Yes, right exactly where it is now.
Mm-hmm. And the bell, of course, is still there.
Oh, yes.
And since Mr. Dowd's death, you've carried on the business by yourself, is that right?
To tell you the truth, I would be very lonely if I didn't keep busy. I have my grandchildren and my family. But when something like this happens to you, to me, the best thing to do is to keep busy.
I think
don't you know? Right. And of course, there are a lot of other ways I could keep busy. But I feel Irv loves his business. He loves the people, and he likes the idea of Dowd's having been part of Mill Valley for so many years. And to me, it's sort of a satisfaction to be able to continue something that he liked so much. And it's sort of a nice thing when people will remember things that happened years ago. And I don't know, I just take some pride in going on with that business.
And at that point, the interview ends.